Welcome to Business Over Borders. I'm your host, Leo Tucker. This program is brought to you by the Reach Network. Today, I'm joined by Grigory Shichko, our head of indirect tax here at Reach. Grigory, welcome to the program.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for having me here tonight.
So one thing I was thinking about today is it seems to be that tax compliance, global tax compliance, is important more so today than it seems to have been ever. What is the reason for such attention to tax compliance for global merchants? Why now?
Back in 2015, only 33 countries imposed tax on cross-border sale of digital services, right? And actually, the whole story began in 2015. But as of today, 90 countries require foreign merchants to collect tax if they sell cross-border. I'm talking about digital services at the moment, right? So can you imagine that? So the increase is like threefold. And these 90 countries, if we consider the U.S. as a single country, but we probably should not, because in the U.S., the sales tax is divided on the state level. So instead of just counting it as one country, we should count it as 47 states with different tax regime. So basically, this is huge. The level of complexity for international merchants is nothing that has been seen before.
Right. So what prompted the big change in 2015? I mean, we started with 33 and we're at, you know, nearly triple that at 90. What happened in 2015?
2015 was, like I said, the beginning of this digital service tax era, as I call it.
Right.
The European Union initiated this trend. They enabled the new legislation where basically foreign vendors required to calculate, collect, and remit tax on sales to individual consumers within the EU countries. And by the way, the UK was part of the EU back then. So basically, the European Union pioneered with this. And after 2015, other countries followed the trend. And if we look at the graph, then the spike was obviously during the pandemic. So as you can imagine, starting from 2019, a lot of people who were in their homes, they started consuming a lot more things like goods and services out of the internet. So the governments all around the world realized that actually it's something that they cannot ignore. That's actually the greatest opportunity for them to collect additional revenue.
Right. So you've got this big boom of people ordering their groceries, their Snuggies and their Netflix services online. So everybody said, hey, we've got this big boom of traffic and orders come in, and let's make sure we're collecting our piece of that. Is that kind of what was going on?
Basically, yeah, it was about missing revenue for governments all around the world.
So what does that mean? So that's kind of how it goes with digital services. That makes sense. Like we're ordering things. But I mean, I guess to take it back to my Snuggie reference, I imagine the rules for digital services are probably a little bit different than the rules for physical goods. You know, if I'm ordering my Netflix, my Amazon services like that, that's one thing. But what about physical goods? Like I'm ordering my Snuggies, I'm ordering my coffee mugs, my comfy house shoes. How are those treated differently, digital services versus physical goods? And what does that mean specifically for merchants who deal in one or the other?
First of all, I'd say that surprisingly, I mean, like ordering physical goods over the internet has been here for many years, right? I would say that even digital services are more recent thing compared to physical goods. What Amazon started with, it was books, right?
Books, yeah.
The progress of taxing digital services is much more than that for physical goods. So, and with digital services, it's relatively simple for merchants to to manage taxes. Basically, it's all about destination principles. So digital services, they are taxed in the country where they are consumed. So no matter where the company selling this, like whatever, software subscription or streaming services is located, it's all about where the end user, the consumer, is based, right? And this is where digital services are taxed. And for digital services, for most of the countries, the registration threshold for international merchants is new. So it means that you need to be registered from the first sale, basically, right? With physical goods, it's much more complicated. Mm. At the moment, 40 countries, 40, require foreign merchants to collect taxes at the point of sale. Then we talk about cross-border sale of physical goods compared to 90 for digital services, right? So there is like this gap. So countries are still catching up with this. The second difference, significant difference, is that when it comes to digital services, most of them are taxed at the standard rate. So you don't need to guess what the right rate of tax to collect from your consumer.
So they get taxed at a single rate across the board.
Usually it is. Usually it's true. But for physical goods, it can be everything, right? So I mean, in terms of the tax rates. The third key difference is that most of the countries which impose taxes on cross-border sale of physical goods, they have so-called low-value good threshold. So usually, international merchants are required to collect taxes only for goods up to the certain amount. I'll give you an example. It's probably easier to explain it by example.
For
example, if you sell something to Australia, then the low-value good threshold is $1,000. So it means that the value of the consignment, of the parcel that you sell to your buyer in Australia is below this $1,000 threshold, then you as a merchant must calculate and collect Australian GST at the point of sale, right? But if the parcel is above this threshold, then you don't need to collect it. It will be collected at the border along with customs duties, but it's customs duties is a separate.
Okay, so that's kind of, you know, I've gotten a package before, got an email that said something to the effect of, you know, your package is here, but it incurred some duties and taxes along the way. And in this case, that would have been something that was above that threshold of $1,000. You know, I buy my really fancy Snuggie, gold studded, bedazzled Snuggie. It's over $1,000. It's very nice, very exclusive. That's going to incur some sort of at the border charge. Whereas if I had bought the bronze level Snuggie, that would have been charged at the time of purchase. Am I understanding this correctly?
So there's low value goods and high value goods. So for high value goods, yes, this the obligation is on the buyer to settle these taxes and customs duties at the border. But for low value goods, the obligation stays with the international merchant to collect those taxes and then obviously remit them to the government, right? But those, so okay. With digital services, moving back to digital services, that's much easier. So you don't need to distinguish between like low-valued digital services or high-valued digital services. It's just digital services. You collect taxes and that's it.
Let's say the merchant's in the United States and they're selling this item in Australia, and let's say they're also selling it in New Zealand. So there's two countries there, and then, you know, if they sell it in another country, what is the process for them to actually, A, calculate, B, you know, hold that money, and then remit it to the local government? Is that sounds like a fairly complicated process of, you know, getting that to the right entities.
That's very true. That's very true. And to give your head another spin, there is also, there might be a registration threshold for international merchants selling physical goods to consumers around the world. Like, for example, if we continue on our example for Australia, the registration threshold is $75,000. So if your revenue, if your turnover for that 12 months is less than that, you're not required to collect tax. So if you had just few occasional sales to someone from Australia, right? For Singapore, for example, it's 100,000 Singapore dollars, right? So those thresholds. So it's not just about this low value good threshold that you need to keep in mind. It's also about this registration threshold. After that, you need to be registered. But yeah, I mean, the registration process is again another roadblocker for merchants to expand their e-commerce merchants to expand their sales globally, because you need to obtain all these tax registrations. And depending on the country, it might be pretty easy, especially if it's say, an English-speaking country. But if it's not, then you need to provide a set of documents. You need to obtain this registration, right? And then you need to file, as you rightly mentioned, you need to file tax returns. Depending on the country, again, it can be monthly, quarterly, it can be bi-monthly.
So as a merchant who's selling products, digital or physical, cross-border to multiple countries, what are the options for getting this right? I imagine you could hire somebody to work in-house. You know, you hire a tax man. We, you know, my business, I hire a Grigri. And you do all this for me. You know, you calculate the taxes, make sure we're getting it right, make sure we're registered in the appropriate jurisdictions, make sure we're settling that money in the correct way in the correct times. Is that the only option? How does a merchant provide this service and do it correctly?
I'll give you an analogy. So in probably early 90s, in the previous century, then the internet has just started, most of the companies, they hired programmers. So most of the companies have some IT coder in-house who developed some custom-built software. That was the only option, right? And it was feasible back then. But after some time, it's probably hard to imagine nowadays that company whose core business is something else would hire like a team of programmers who would code something like, I don't know, Office 365, but you know, custom built. It's not feasible, right?
So right, in-house.
In-house. I mean, you can still do that probably, but efforts and time that you need for that. I believe that if we consider taxes on cross-border supply of digital services and physical goods, it's a similar situation now. So, like I said, when it all started back in 2015, it was pretty much doable to handle it internally inside the company, right? Even though I calculated, I made my own estimates, and I believe that, and they were conservative, that and I have this like calculation somewhere that the company, if the company decides to keep it in house, nevertheless it would cost the company at least $500,000 to handle that per year.
I'm sorry, did you say $500,000?
Yes, half a million.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
It is, because you need to hire one person, won't be able to handle that. And again, just imagine just consider the risks. If everything is handled by just one person, what happens if they fall under the bus, right? So you need to have a team, and it's about tax legislation. So it's not carved in stone, right? So rates are changing. For example, during the pandemic time, a lot of countries temporarily reduced their VAT rates to ease the pressure on their economies. And as an international merchant, you must have considered this, right? Because you cannot, again, charge the same tax as before, right? In new countries are catching up with these trends. So you need to monitor the legislation. You need to calculate this tax. You need to collect tax and obtain all those registrations that might take, from my experience, if you start right from the beginning, it might take up to 18 months in the best case scenario to cover all the countries. So like 1.5 years, right, to get all these registrations. And there's another thing that a lot of people don't think about, that from time to time, tax authorities like to conduct tax audits. Mm. Doesn't mean that someone did something wrong. Sometimes they might be triggered by some non-compliance, but some countries, they actually, they practice, you know, like these just, you know, sample checks, as I call them. And again, you need to handle them, and usually they are very much time constrained. So usually you need to respond to an inquiry from a tax authority within like certain pretty limited amount of time.
Okay, so that's option one. That's option one. You need $500,000, a year and a half, somebody to make sure you're staying compliant and maintaining the appropriate rates and remittance laws, and handle any audits that come up. Okay, scenario one. It's not looking good. What else we got?
I would say to use a solution which is available on the market, which is known as a merchant of record.
Okay.
The merchant of record concept has become popular along with the growth in this sales over the internet. So the merchant of record is like an intermediary between the original merchant selling this fancy snack, as you call that, and the buyer. So at the moment then the sale happens, the sale is handled by the merchant of record. Not right. only the merchant of record provides access to multiple payment methods, so it's another benefit, right? But also a merchant of record usually handles taxes. Right?
Because they're the ones actually doing the sale and the payment gateway, you know, connection there. Okay, so they're handling the taxes too. All right.
Yeah. And another benefit, and in my opinion, pretty important benefit for a merchant who uses the merchant of record services, is that the obligation and responsibility for taxes stays with the merchant of record. There is almost no chance that this liability can be shifted to the original merchant. So it means that if something goes wrong, or I don't know, like the rate was miscalculated, or the tax authorities decides to conduct tax audit, it will be again so the merchant is like, you know, safeguarded by the merchant of record.
Yeah, absolutely. So the merchant of record takes on that liability of the tax compliance and the filing, collection, and ultimate remittance of those to the local governments. So that makes sense. So they can come in and say, hey, we'd love access to your payment gateways, your multiple payment methods. And in addition, you'll take care of the taxes. I imagine that's quite a value add to especially any small, medium business that's just, you know, we're just trying to get off the ground and sell our Snuggies globally.
I believe that for every business, the possibility to focus on their core business is actually a very good thing.
Things sort of seem to start changing in 2015, and here we are in 2024, past, post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. What trends do you see going forward? Like, how is the landscape of international tax compliance going to affect businesses, large and small, digital and physical? What's coming down the pipe?
First of all, big news, guys, it's not gonna become any easier, right? So, sorry about that, Leo. Basically, if we consider all the countries worldwide, if I'm not mistaken, about 170 countries has some kind of consumption tax, whether it's VAT, GST, sales tax. And out of that 170, only 90 implemented tax on digital services, and much less implemented tax on physical goods, right? So it means that
just over half, roughly, yeah.
Yeah. And with physical goods, it's even less than half, right? Much less than half. And what countries realized? Why it's important for them to do so? There are two key reasons as I see them. The first reason is leveling the playing field. Say we've got two e-commerce stores. Let it be Brazil. It's probably a good country for example. You've got a local store in Brazil selling some snuggies, and this store, because it's domestic, it usually needs to be registered for VAT or equivalent of tax in this country and collect tax on these snuggies from local buyers, right? But I can set up the same store somewhere abroad with the same snuggies and sell it cross-border to consumers in Brazil, and I don't need to collect tax. Because it's actually an actual example, because Brazil at the moment one of the few large countries which hasn't imposed tax on cross-border sale, neither digital services or.
So is it advantageous then at the moment to set up, you know, an entity outside and sell into Brazil than it is to actually sell from Brazil to Brazil? Wow.
Absolutely. Okay. And given that on average, the VAT rate is something like about 15%. It's very average, right? It differs from 5 to 27. 27 is the highest rate in the world. But on average, say it's 15%. So you can give your buyer a discount easily of 10% if we like elaborate on this example, right? And you would still get more, like you will still be better off 5%. Compared to the local store, right? That's what I call leveling the playing field. If I haven't put you asleep yet, so I'll give you another trend. It's more related to digital services than to physical goods. It's what is called digital service tax. So we've just discussed VAT or equivalent taxes like GST, or what they are called consumption taxes, because effectively they are tax on consumption. But
consumables, yeah.
Countries that has been doing this journey for quite some time, but what about corporate income tax? Those merchants, they paid in their country, right? In their country where they are established. So the new trend, which is currently unfolding, is this the second level of taxes, which is called digital service tax. So there was actually this practice was paused for a couple of years because countries believed back then that they would be able to come up with a universal solution to that. But apparently, it was supposed to start from 2023. Now the deadline was moved to 2026, and there's no certainty that all the countries, because you know they need to be like they need to reach an agreement, basically, right? How to tax universally these global companies.
Yeah, I get dozens and dozens of countries to agree to the same terms. Yeah, that sounds reasonable and easy to do. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so countries decided that, yeah, they, I mean, like, they need to handle it by themselves. So more and more countries have recently started imposing additional, like, the second layer of taxes. But so far, it's only applicable to very large companies. So usually the threshold is about 750 million euros or $1 billion in global sales per year. So it's relatively large companies that fall under this, like, sorry, breach this threshold, not fall under, but above this threshold for digital services.
That's interesting, and it seems like it's only getting more and more complicated, which is why something like a merchant of record, someone will handle the compliance, the filing, and just knowing how to calculate the taxes in the first place is only going to become more important and more valuable. Grigory, thank you very much for your time. I've enjoyed chatting with you. This is certainly the most enjoyable talk about tax I'm likely to ever have. So thank you for walking me through this.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me here tonight.
And that's all we've got for Business Over Borders. Until next time, see ya.
Brought to you by the Reach Network. Visit withreach.com/network for more.